On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Let me first of all tender to you my profound apologies for not being on the air Thursday evening. I was at a reception for the Society of Environmental Journalists in Roanoke, Virginia. I had hoped to broadcast from there, but the rooms were wall-to-wall with information and tables bearing the same. And frankly, there was no room for little old me. And it's something we didn't know going over whether there would be or not. It didn't work out that way. Met a lot of wonderful people, and did a little bit of talking to folks about the hell of mountaintop removal and how it affects the rest of the nation and, in fact, the planet. So it was time well spent. Learned a lot of stuff too. Saw some great exhibits. And yes, ate some wonderful food. A lot of good food. So that's where I was. But this evening, is an entirely different situation. Or actually, it's not different. It's entirely normal. I'm seated here in the chair behind the non-golden Head On Radio Network microphone. And it's Friday, the close of the week, and the front end, the close of a week that leads to a very, very busy week coming. Tomorrow is, of course, hereabouts, a little something we call Bridge Day, when it's the only time of the year when people are actually allowed out on the walking around on the New River Gorge Bridge, and it's also the only time of the year when it is legal to base jump from the bridge. Folks leap off of a platform into the New River Gorge from the bridge, and it's just a stunning sight. It is really this area's best foot put forward. And we will have family members working various different booths. One of my daughters will be working a booth related to mountaintop removal and to the attack, the assault, on the very mountain that graces the back of the West Virginia State Quarter, which sooner or later won't be there. Another daughter will be personing a booth for the Fayette County Young Democrats. And some of us will also be wandering about hither and thither. It'll be a long day, but a pleasant one. No Lottie parachuting. I don't think they do any bungee. Now, they do a zip line, you know, a static line. You can ride a static line for a good ways, not all the way to the bottom of the gorge, but it's still pretty cool. But it is, yeah, it's parachuting with these ultralight parachute packs and jumping with the, what's the first chute? They literally jump, throw the chute, and then, you know, everything hopefully works out properly and on down to the river, and you try not to land in the river and you try not to land in the trees. That's really the key to a successful jump from the New River Gorge Bridge. The food, cobwebs, the food sat very well with me. The Environmental Defense Fund had a room featuring a celebrity chef that was a real pleasure. And he was, in fact, I hope to get him on the program talking about food sustainability and especially seafood sustainability. I'm looking for his card right now so I can share his name with you. Come on, Bob. Ah, there it is. I see it. Nope. There it is. Yep. Great little business card. Sustainability begins with people. The chef's name is Barton Seaver, and he is at Barton Seaver, BartonSeaver.org. And he is a chef of considerable growing renown, and I had a lovely conversation with him talking about seafood sustainability. The Environmental Defense Fund was passing out these cool little cards so that people in seafood markets or at their grocery stores can make intelligent choices about the seafood that they purchase with intentions toward encouraging the purchase of sustainable and safe seafood, as opposed to those seafood products which are endangered and come from fisheries that are profoundly overfished. We had a great conversation, and I look forward to having him on the show at some point. You know, they had a cameraman there who was videoing him and projecting it onto these humongous widescreens, and I watched the preparation of a delicious piece of mahi-mahi that was just exquisite over a beautiful little sauce that was garnished with very lightly sautéed cubes of red bell pepper. They were also serving up, no, this is not the food review. We'll just get the food porn out of the way, okay? They served up smoky cheddar cheese grits. And to the Southerners in the audience, I can hear the salivating right now. And that was yummy. And the scallops done in a garlic aioli. Ho-ho, mama! That was one room. There was a dessert room. There was another room where they were doing ribs and spoon bread, and another room, prime rib and ham, and I tasted things. I didn't go wild. But it was a lot of, in our room, bless it, you know, we're us. We're mountain folk, and we are hill folk, and we didn't serve out anything profoundly fancy. We served hill food. We served beans and cornbread. And I got to tell you, I walked into our room where we were displaying, and I was proud as punch when I saw that big pot of beans. It just warmed my heart, and dadgum, they were good pinto beans, too. Real good. Beautiful little corn muffins. Cornbread muffins. Mm-hmm. So it was a great, and met some journalists. And in the company of a lot of folks from the Alliance for Appalachia, which included some folks from Coal River Mountain Watch, like Nick Rigolato and Lorelei Scarborough and Roy McElmoyle and Matt Nerpel, Vivian Stockman from the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition was there, Dana Kuhnlein from the Alliance for Appalachia, lots of folks. And just looking for people with the little, you know, hi, my name is journalist tags on it. Hey, come here. So we passed out a lot of, I think we conveyed a lot of good information. And in fact, my road tripping buddy, Nick Regalado, is with us this evening, occupying host chair number two in the studio here. The mystery guest, sign in, please.
Hello, Bob. And hello, everyone.
Nick and I rode over together, over to Roanoke, about 2.5 hours over, 2.5 back, and had a darn good road trip out of it all. What was your impression, Nick?
Of the conference?
Yeah.
It was good. You know, met a lot of interesting people dealing with coming at the environmental issues from a lot of different angles.
Yeah, and I don't want to create any false impressions. This wasn't a great big environmental kumbaya session.
No, it was not. I can't say that it was all in the family, that's for sure.
No, there was some greenwashing going on.
There was absolutely some greenwashing happening in that hotel.
Let's see, there was a table for some folks who want to save America by turning coal into natural gas, right?
Oh, yeah.
There was a table hosted by Dominion Energy of Virginia, which just doesn't think that Virginians are breathing enough coal filth. They were there. And the bags, did you see that? Did you get one of their little ditty bags?
I did manage to pick up one of the Dominion bags, and I thought it really spoke to their mindset. It was kind of funny.
Yeah, it was a navy blue bag, right?
It was a blue bag, and it actually it said something to the effect of, "You may think this bag is blue, but it's actually green." And I looked at it, and I thought, wow, that says a lot about the way they think, doesn't it?
Well, it's the very epitome of greenwashing, isn't it? And I know most of the audience is familiar with the term greenwashing, but just in case there's anybody who doesn't, what greenwashing is when an environmental nightmare company that's actively engaged in destroying the planet spends a few extra bucks on some PR, and with the PR declares themselves to be green. Well, that's what greenwashing is. And at the very least, this was a classic case of greenwashing. But it's not the one that offended me the most, Nick.
Oh, which one struck the fancy, Bob?
Sustain the Mission.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the...
Big poster. I mean, your tax dollars at work. Huge poster, okay, of a soldier with the helmet and, you know, all ready to rock and roll and cock and lock and run, ready to fall full battle rattle, you know, the works, standing there. And I guess he's been photoshopped into, or maybe they took him there, a landscape. He's standing at the crest of a mountain, and there's a bunch of mountains beneath and behind him, you know, beautiful green Appalachian Hills kind of affair. And at the top of the, and I'm talking about this thing was probably 8 feet tall.
Oh, certainly.
By 4 feet wide. Full color. And it says at the top, "Sustain the Mission." And I walked by that thing the first time and had one of those W.C. Fields moments, you know, those classic trip, not a double take, but a triple take where you go, uh-huh? And walked, and the thing was about the United States Army Sustainability Command. No, I'm not making that up. I got photos to prove this, okay? The United States Army Sustainability Command. And so, because I'm kind of a jerk, you know, I had my little badge on, said, you know, Bob Kincaid, Cold River Mountain Watch. And I once in a while, I'd just walk over and stand by. And curiously enough, there were no members of the United States Army Sustainability Command. Nobody quite had the guts to stand and take the heat for that. I mean, that is the highest level of greenwashing I have ever seen.
I wandered by there a few times. I was trying to find out if there was anyone actually representing that booth. I really was looking forward to having that conversation.
But I did see people that would stop. And, you know, most of the people there, not everybody, but most of the people there were environmentally conscious. And I just kind of wander up and going, kind of sort of from upside down world, don't you think? And they'd look and go, yeah, this is nuts. And the thing that just crawled all over me is the United States Army has a sustainability command. Where, I don't know, I guess they recycle beer cans and things like that from the enlisted men's club or the PX or the officers club or whatever. And that makes them green. Army green. On the other hand, however, we've got this little depleted uranium problem. Yeah, don't think about that. We have a sustainability command. Well, as it turns out, however, the United States Army is actively engaged in sustaining cancer rates in Iraq and Bosnia and Kosovo, Serbia. Yeah, kind of. A little bit.
You know, it's funny. I didn't really see any information that really spoke to how they were doing anything environmentally conscious whatsoever.
No, it's greenwashing. That's the purpose of greenwashing. You're not actually doing anything. You're just putting out a warm, fuzzy PR effort, and that's all.
It was strange because, you know, you usually encounter some sort of lukewarm, rationale attempt, you know, but there was no explanation. It was just a plain propaganda poster.
Yeah, and not even a bogus blue bag that they said was green. I mean, but all told, it was a magnificent conference. Learned about some really cool books from a publisher in D.C. named Island Press. Heard one gentleman delivering a little lecture about his book called More that I got to get this guy on the program. One of the things that I heard him put forward was that when women are able to control and make their own reproductive choices, worldwide standards of living go up culturally. When they are unable to make those choices, cultural standards of living go down.
Interesting.
And he put the two and two together and added 12 and carried 5 and all of, and it made sense. But I had never thought of it in those terms. And that's what you get with really good environmental reporting. There's a book, I guess it had won the Rachel Carson Award the night before. What was it? An Uncommon History of the Sea or something like that, that I've got to get my hands on and hope to get the author on the air here. It was a magnificent experience all the way around. And apparently, there was one busload of environmental journalists that went to Cayford Mountain yesterday. They were just returning from their road trip as the reception was beginning. And I got to tell you, I don't know where, I'll try to find out where and when it's going to be displayed. Jeff Chapman Crane, wasn't that the sculptor's name?
I believe so.
There is he has done a sculpture, and I had seen photos of it in the past. And it was in our room, the Alliance for Appalachia's room. I'd say it's what, maybe 6 feet wide by 2.5 feet deep by 2 feet tall.
Yeah, it's got, that's about right.
It's a big piece. And the title of it is The Agony of Gaia. And I stood, and like I said, I'd seen photos of it. I had never seen it in person. And I don't, I'm not nearly as well traveled as many people. But I've seen some things. I have seen treasures of ancient Egypt. I have seen gilded Egyptian sarcophagi. I've seen tiny alabaster sculptures of hippopotami and various and sundry gods. I've seen Michelangelo's David and Michelangelo's Pietà. Seen the Vatican and all its statuary. Seen some pretty impressive paintings. Seen some art. Studied some art. But when I walked into the Alliance's room for the first time and I saw that sculpture there, I was transfixed. I was moved as I have never before in my life been moved by a piece of art.
It was something else.
And I kept coming back and looking at it. I took the cell phone and took a photograph of it and, just a low-res photo. And sent it to Agnes here. She wept. I'll be honest, I don't know if it's online. Let me just open a browser window here and see. Let me see if there's a photo of it. Sorry for the dead air agony. G-A-I-A.
Yeah, I'm almost certain you can find maybe a small.
Okay, here it is. If you go to kftc.org, which is Kentuckians for the Commonwealth, kftc.org, or just Google Agony of Gaia, it should be the first thing that pops up. And I was reminded to mention this based on what the author had been speaking about, the correlation between women's abilities to control their own destinies and world health, because the Agony of Gaia And again, just Agony of Gaia at Google and click images or go to the first thing that pops up at Kentuckians for the Commonwealth. The Agony of Gaia is a depiction of a mountain as a woman lying prone. As mountaintop removal is being performed on her. And like I said, I had seen photographs of this before. The photograph does not do it justice. I came back again and again and again to look at this sculpture. And with each return, a little bit more of me shook. A little bit more of me was troubled to the very core. This beautiful woman lying nude, depicted as a mountaintop, her hands clutched in agony over her face as demolition crews rip away at her very flesh. And I will not lie to you. Much as is depicted in the sculpture itself in the little stream that flows from her face, I wept. And I don't know how any human being with a beating heart can look at it and not. You know, I said a little bit ago that I've been to the Vatican. I have seen the masterwork of Michelangelo. I have seen the Pietà. That masterful rendition in marble of the crucified Christ lying in his mother's arms. And what I came away with from the Agony of Gaia is that this is the ultimate Pietà. Have you seen it yet? If you're listening live, have you gone and found it yet? Shoot me an email if you've seen this. Tell me what you think. Bob@headonradio.com. If you're listening in delay, when you get a chance, just go and see this. I took some very high-resolution photographs of it. I don't know how. Maybe we can get it onto the website or something. Some detail shots. The place where the greatest amount of work is taking place is in her abdomen. Literally aborting the life from her. They've blown away her shins, cut off a foot. You can't really see it, but you know, bones are exposed and she bleeds. I had hours to contemplate this piece. And I would put it up against any piece of art in the history of this planet. Really? I mean, am I overstating it, Nick?
No, I'm with you on that, Bob. When I saw it, I'd seen an image of it before, but actually seeing it in person, it was one of those moments when that calls for, you know, silence and reflection. It was, you know, it stirred me up, and it just, I don't know, man, it's moving. It speaks on so many levels. It's almost hard to look at, but it's hard to tear yourself away.
Well, it is indeed. And like I've just put a link to it in the chat room, and if more folks wander in and want to see it, if one of you would please just repeat the link or repaste the link. Gaia, Agony of Gaia, Gaia. You must. And you must contemplate the reality of it. There were folks there from West Virginia, from Kentucky, from Tennessee, from the Carolinas, from Virginia. It was, it was a crowd, big crowd. And like I said, tons of food, and I looked at Nick and I looked at Lorella both, and I said, I hope to God that with the food that will go to waste here tonight. Because, you know, you always have to overcook for something like this. I hope to God that this food will be taken to the local homeless shelter and let those folks have a feast on us this evening. So that's where we were yesterday evening. That's why we weren't on the air. This is, of course, Friday, as I noted. That is your last chance to get the burr out from under your saddle or the bee out from under your bonnet for the next couple of days. With that in mind, make use of the phones, 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on. That's toll-free. We'll be happy to pay the freight. On your nickel, however, if you want to save us a little bit of money, 304-658-3333. They both ring in the same place, and the phones are answered in the order in which they are, the calls are answered in the order in which they are received. Please to make a note of it. Email rolls into bob@headonradio.com, and I'll try to respond as ever. I try to respond to everything that I do receive on air. If not on air, then I try to respond. I try to respond off air if it takes greater time. Got an email in the other day from one of our overseas listeners. Young man by the name of Petros, who is preparing to hopefully study for his PhD, and I'll try to answer that one at length off air. So jump in with your thoughts, your ideas. Today was an interesting, it was also interesting as we blew out of Roanoke today. There was a big Barack Obama rally scheduled right there in Roanoke. And frankly, we had planned to attend. We had not planned on being back until later in the day. But we got up, and I hate that. You know, I hope we don't come across as
fair weather.
Fair weather supporters. But it was a miserable, drizzling, soaking rain, and we drove by the Roanoke Civic Center. And there was already a line of humanity, I would guess, probably in excess of a mile long, waiting to get into the venue. And the rain was pouring. And I've heard Barack Obama speak. I've shaken his hand. Nick has heard Barack Obama speak. So we decided to mail a card to Mother and, you know, bring it on home. So please, you know, forgive us. But I was going to go and take pictures and stuff, and I didn't know. We didn't have any umbrellas. We knew we'd wind up soaked and frozen, probably get pneumonia, probably ruin the cameras that we were going to try to go in and, you know, take photographs with. So we took a powder on it. But all things, you know, the Bible says that all things work together for good for those who love the Lord. Sorry, this is not prayer meeting, and I'm not going to go there. But we decided to take a powder on it, so we went on past the Civic Center down to the intersection where we would turn left to get back on 581 to go out to 81 to come on home. And the light was red in the left turn lane. And I've never been so glad to see a red light in my entire life. Because off to our left, as we sat in the left turn lane waiting, were a bunch of fascist freaks with their McCain-Palin signs. And I'm trying to put into use the words of Tim Wise in that brilliant essay that I shared with you the other night before the debate. And so I rolled down the window, and there were a bunch of phony plumbers. No kidding. Guys dressed up with plumbers, one of them with a tool belt on. This is the kind of slur that Republicans have for working men and women. Phony plumbers, dummied up plumbers, fake plumbers with blue jeans on and a tool belt and his blue jeans pulled down so that the crack of his butt was exposed. You saw it. I'm not making it up, am I,
no,
Nick?
No, that's the truth.
You know, white T-shirts, and they're all carrying, because this is what they think of the plumber's craft and the plumber's trade, all carrying plungers. So, down comes the window. Glad you boys brought them plungers. You're going to be needing them to deal with the policies of your boy Bomber John. Fascist thugs. And, of course, there they were on the corner as well, the people who were obsessed with women's insides. Bear in mind what I said earlier about what we learned last night. When women are allowed and able, you know, and that's just the sick part. When women are allowed, when women are permitted, who the hell's got the right or the nerve to tell a woman what she can do with her own insides? Permitted my left hind foot. But there are those, and they are generally authoritarian swine who want to do that. And there they were on the corner with their little McCain Palin country first stick signs. So, back down comes the window. I'm serious. I'm not going to put up with this crap anymore. I'm going to confront these little bastards because I love America enough to do it.
Yes.
So, down comes the window. Hey, lady! Who would Jesus bomb?
Hell, that is the question, right?
Hey, lady! Why don't you quit aborting all the little Iraqi babies? Or are they just brown and don't matter? Why don't you Democrats quit aborting babies? Fascist scum! I ain't playing nice no more. And there's more. Dear God, I haven't heard so many stories about damn plumbers since the Nixon administration. There's more, and we will, by God, get to it. But I can't talk about all this and how one responds to fascism without a little musical interlude, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Horn, America's liberal voice.
I'm trying to be less polite. I'm saying what I really think. The president's a fool. I don't want to get up early, and I wish I had a good stiff drink. I'm trying to be less polite. I want to call a spade a spade. I want to stop the war because I know the war will send too many children to an early grave. I'm trying to be less polite. I'm trying to be less polite. I'm fed up with the Christian wrong. Sing it to you in this song. I'm trying to be less polite.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
And yeah, we're back. Nick Regalado and I sitting here on a Friday evening conversing, carrying on, having a heck of a good time. Who was that? Who was that really cool guy that did the wind ed? That was Nick. Yeah, exactly. Note in from Chris. He says, with regard to the agony of Gaia, is there a high-resolution photo available? Like I said, I'll try to get one onto the website as quickly as I possibly can. I don't think the artist would mind, do you, Nick? Helps if I turn your mic on.
Yeah, that works. No, I don't figure he would.
But he says, thanks. What a wonderful piece of love. And love tells and shows the truth. And indeed. So let's go back for just a minute, just for the fun of it, at least until the phones light up for this Friday evening. Let's go back to the business about these plumbers. Like I said, I haven't heard so much about plumbers since Richard Nixon left office. Joe the Plumber, said by the Senator Lumpy McHoover to have been the star of the debate. Well, it's pretty obvious that something is not quite right. Everything around this is just a little too pat, a little too perfect.
Smells like sewage.
Yeah, it does. It does. And of course, so let's start with these dummied up, faked up, ginned up, rubed up plumbers crossing the street in Roanoke this morning. We thought it was cute, Nick and I. It was funny. Gave him a little bit of hell. Then I come home, come back to the studio here, and I go to WD40.com. You know, among my absolute favorite websites, certainly top three. These guys have a nose for what's news. Clyde and Wally and Dookie. And by the way, some changes are coming. W is going away, so they're going to be changing the website, and it will be viewer and reader driven, and I think it'll be something really special. Clyde dropped me a note asking me to mention that. There's an if you just sort of drill down a ways on the website, I think you can probably get to it and see what exactly they have in mind. The website address itself may change. But I have a feeling there will be a redirect and everything, so not to worry. But these, just because W is disappearing doesn't mean they are, because they are providing, these great guys in the heartland are providing a tremendous service. It's about, oh, come on, oh, okay, secret time. It's about half my show prep. I mean, it's like they do it for me. So, WD40.com, I'll let you know as the changes come along. But it's still, for the time being, D-U-B-Y-A-D, D-U-B-Y-A-D, the numeral 4 and the numeral 0. Get it? WD40.com. And it's on any given day, it's a great place to start your news analysis. But so I come home and I go to WD40.com like I always do when I'm doing show prep. And there's a photograph of these horses' rear ends that we saw in Roanoke.
There they are.
Yeah, Nick's with them. Hey, Nick, we can't get away from these fool bastards. And, of course, since they are, in fact, a repig-licking outfit, it is, therefore, a lie. Because they're repig-lickings, and the truth ain't in them, as we like to say here in the hills. Who are these little, Mom, Dad, time to get little Timmy and little Susie out of the room. Who are these little turd chasers on the side of the road? Well, even though one of them is holding a sign with his mouth hanging open, catching flies in this photograph with their plungers thrust triumphantly into the air, one of them's holding a sign that says, "I am Joe the Plumber." Well, no, not really. And here in a minute we'll get into the rest of why Joe the Plumber ain't Joe the Plumber either. He's a dummied up, faked up, frauded up, ginned up, rubed up, right-wing, repig-licking construction. Just like everything else repig-licking, it's all a movie set. It's one of those, it's the facade, Rock Ridge from Blazing Saddles. It's nothing but storefronts. It's not nothing behind it. There's no there. There's an explanation at WD40.com. It links to a CBS website story. Yeah, one of these creeps, who, by the way, like I said, manifested his disdain for people who work in really hard, brutal jobs that involves a hell of a lot more than a plunger, was walking around with his butt crack showing deliberately. Oh, that's so cute, boys. Who are they? Well, none of them is Joe Wurzelbacher, whom Senator Lumpy McHoover referred to during the debate as Joe Wurzelberger. And when you find out the facts behind it, you're going to kind of wonder, you know, maybe if that wasn't an inadvertent slip of the tongue. But if maybe that was intended to try to get people to forget Wurzelbacher and go off down the garden path and down the rabbit hole looking for Joe Wurzelberger. But anyway, this crowd of phony plumbers standing on the side of the road in Roanoke today included, and no offense to our listenership and our dear friends in Australia, it included, guys, sorry, it's one of yours, a right-wing thug by the name, well, doggone it. Looking for it here. A right-wing thug who says he's an actual plumber, but he's from Melbourne, Australia. So, no vote for that plumber. He's the one on the far right in the photograph if you go and look at it. Who are the other ones? Well, another one. The one on the far left with his triumphantly thrust plunger and his mouth hanging open is a guy by the name of Charlie Smith. And Charlie Smith, young man, is none other than the chairman of the National College Repiglickens. This is a war supporter. This is one of those Iraq supporters. This is one of those who supports occupying a sovereign nation and attacking it and slaughtering up to a million of its innocent citizens. And yet finds himself best serving his country by waving a plunger around on a street corner in Roanoke, Virginia. Really. You want to hear from these thugs? CBS provided video. Let's check it out. I hope. After the ad. Oh, for-profit media, how I sometimes loathe you. Yeah, they got to sell me some mouthwash for it. Yeah, here we go. All right. Quite the vocabulary. You'll notice they're not cheering McCain.
Barack Obama. He's going to tax small businesses. He's going to tax individuals. He's going to tax investments. John McCain will cut taxes. He'll jumpstart this economy. He'll get more jobs for more Americans.
That's the president of the College of Piglickens.
Back to high taxes and a high tax-induced recession. We're out here supporting the American dream. People like Joe the Plumber who want to start their own business.
Yes.
Who want to join a small business.
Yes.
Whose family runs a small business. That's the engine of the American economy. That's what will restart our economy, get more jobs, and get us going again. It's time for people to join John McCain.
Yeah, sure. Just one problem. Just one problem. Joe the Plumber is a complete fake. Not 10 cents worth of reality about him. Now, this is bits and pieces of this have been reported elsewhere, but I got to give props to a gentleman whom you have heard on this program in the past, a fellow by the name of Matt Osborne. Matt Osborne is an Iraq veteran. He is from my hometown. And something just rubbed him the wrong way about Joe the Plumber, too. And he points out right away, there's only one problem. His name isn't really Joe. He isn't really a plumber. He's connected to McCain in all the wrong ways, and he's hardly an independent voter.
Surprise. Not.
As Matt writes, the more light gets shined on this average Joe, the less average he looks. And in fact, Joe has setup written all over him. Matt says the scheme also has incompetent written in big red letters.
What a load.
Who is he really? Well, he does have ties to John McCain, and like Matt says, in all the wrong ways. John McCain called him Joe Wurzelberger during the debate. That's because his real name is Sam. Samuel Joseph Wurzelbacher. He's kinfolk with a gentleman by the name, and I use the term loosely, a gentleman by the name of Robert Wurzelbacher, Jr. Who was Robert Wurzelbacher, Jr.? Anybody? Anybody? Bueller. 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 Robert Wurzelbacher Jr. was a partner in the Keating Five scandal. Yes, 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 yes. A crook. Now, I wouldn't say crook if he wasn't a crook. Robert Wurzelbacher Jr. did time. Yep. He was sentenced to 40 months in prison for the Lincoln Savings and Loan debacle. He is a consistent and frequent contributor to right-wing political causes. Ancestry.com shows that Samuel J. Wurzelbacher used to live at 1960 West Keating Drive in Mesa, Arizona.
He even lived on the street.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, yeah. He was in the Keating hood. What a con. And so Samuel Joseph Wurzelbacher is a member of his extended family. Interestingly, Sam Wurzelbacher ain't no plumber. He is from Ohio, and in Ohio, one is required to have a plumber's license. Sam Joe Wurzelbergerbacher. What is it with these Repiglicans and their names? Do you remember Jimmy Jeff Ganniguck?
Wow, that's a mouthful.
Jeff Gannon, Jimmy Guckert, Jimmy Dale Guckert, hot military studs for you. The guy who was selected to throw George a softball question anytime it looked like George was floundering at the mic. Remember him, Nick?
Can't say that I do, but the more you describe him, I'm glad that I missed out on that.
Well, he came and went, and maybe in more ways than one, from the White House with ease.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm pulling together a few.
Yeah. Don't close your eyes too soon.
I tried to forget that.
Yeah, that's the insides of your eyelids will burn, Nick. But anyway, another dummied up name. Sammy Joe Wurzelbergerbacher hasn't had a plumber's license since the year 2002. For those keeping score at home, that's 6 years ago. Yep. He is no member of the UA or any plumbers or pipe fitters union. The local union rep where he lives says there is no member named Wurzelbacher or Wurzelberger, Samuel, or Joe in their shop. It's all fake. It's all a fraud. It's all Repiglicanism. It's all a con. He also, there's more to this. There's more and more to this, but right now we have to say goodbye to Nick for at least a little bit.
We'll be back shortly.
Okay. All right. Do that. And we'll continue with the sad, sorry, and sordid tale of Sammy Joe Wurzelbergerbacher Bickerbacker. Matt Osborne, like I said, did a tremendous job of this. OsborneInc.com for the full rundown. OsborneInc.com. Matt notes that as for his tale of woe, the numbers don't make any sense. If the plumbing business Joe Sam Wurzelbacher Backerbacher Bickerbacker Booger says he wants to buy is truly making more than $250,000 profit, then the actual cost of that franchise should be over $1 million. Steve Young points out at Huffington Post that anybody with that kind of scratch ain't middle class, which makes small business taxes utterly irrelevant. And what's more, that business, you remember when they asked John McCain what constituted being rich? And he answered, making $5 million a year made you rich. Well, in old Lumpy McHoover's world, you know, just making a couple of million a year puts you in poverty, I guess. By the way, Sam Joe Wurzel Backer Bocker Burger Bigger Bugger is a registered pig licking. It was literally a matter of hours from Lumpy McHoover's first mention of him before it just so happened. It just so happened that a camera crew shows up from a right-wing think tank. Yeah. And they produce a video right there in Sam Joe Wurzel Backer Bicker Backer Booger Burger's house.
It's when the phones ring and everyone calling me, it's been difficult to pay too much attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think McCain did much better this time. He really got out his points. So I was pleased with that. I mean, Obama, you can't take away that he's just he's a damn good speaker. Yeah, but McCain came across with some solid points, and I was real happy about that. He came across with, his tax cuts, which I think, I think are ultimately very good. Obama, I mean, he sits there and says he wants to help the middle class, but, I'm middle class. You see my house. I don't have any bells and whistles in here, really, and, my truck's a couple years old.
No, the bells and whistles are off on West Keating Drive in Mesa, Arizona, aren't they, Sam or Joe or whatever the hell your name is?
I called your name during the insurance stuff. What did you think about that whole exchange?
I like McCain's proposal better than Obama.
Because, Lumpy McHoover wants to tax people for having health care already, including members of organized labor who have some of the strongest health care plans on the planet. Yeah, and you'll recall that Lumpy McHoover said of Sam Joe Wurzel Backer Booker Bicker Burger Backer Booger whatever, that he worked at, my friends, he's working 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. Well, he may have been, not the day after the debate he wasn't, because he was right there waiting for the camera crew. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
A lot of what I find in life is luck. If you're in the right spot at the right time and actually have some money in your pocket to make it happen, then hey, great. But at the same time, I believe anybody can succeed. So to take someone else's money and redistribute it, I mean, that, like I said, it's a socialist remark, and that's just absolutely wrong. I mean, we're a democracy here. I believe in capitalism. I think some of the people that are...
I believe in capitalism, because I do the upspeak thing. I believe in capitalism. Do I? I don't know. It sounds like a question. What a fraud. Why? It's almost pointless to ask this question, and possibly rhetorical. But why can't the Repiglicans just deal with an issue? You present your ideas, we'll present ours, and we'll see who wins. No sleazy attack ads. No screaming off with his head or bomb Obama or kill him or terrorist or anything like that. Just put your ideas out there. Lumpy McHoover says that working class people need to pay taxes on their health insurance plans. Barack Obama doesn't. American people, you pick. Matt Osborne also points out that Lumpy McHoover created the Joe the Plumber meme solely and exclusively to create something that would separate him from the failed attempt at the William Ayers blood libel. I think we really ought not let that happen. I sincerely believe we really ought not let that happen. So that's what happens with the first hour of the program this evening. If you want to get in on the conversation, you are welcome to do so. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or 304-658-3333. Email to Bob at headonradio.com. Bob at headonradio.com. It's just that easy. Don't be shy. A little request from ELO in the chat room. Equally appropriate. This is the horn.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Hour two is underway. We're going to go to the phones. Coming up on 4 minutes past the hour, past 7 o'clock here in the Eastern Time Zone this evening before Bridge Day 2008. You remember that slightly rude sign that they were that made its way around the internet during the early days of the Wall Street crisis? Jump, you ers. We should have invited him to Bridge Day. Here's a trivia fact for you. The height of the deck of the New River Gorge Bridge, from the deck of the New River Gorge Bridge to the water below, is only 3 feet shorter than the height of the Eiffel Tower. Jump, you. Here, have a parachute. Oh, wait a minute. Was that a brick? You know what I mean. It was a great photo. Jump, you. A couple of emails rolled in. David in Tennessee, moved by the agony of Gaia, G-A-I-A. Just Google it, The Agony of Gaia. You'll see it. And at some point, as soon as I get a chance to download the photos off the camera, I'll try to do it even better justice. David also says, the plumber story reminds me, in the 1960s, there was this college group, the Young Americans for Freedom, or a Piglick and Shill group. David's more genial. He says Republican. I say Repiglican. A Republican shill group dedicated to jump-starting the attack on anything good in America. The Young Americans for Freedom, they quickly became YAF in college circles. So I hand-lettered a sweatshirt with "My dog goes YAF when he shits." That's how we respond to these people. The tea time's over. There's no time left for being nice to these people. These people that want to destroy our government, look, I give up. I quit. They're not my fellow Americans. Not only my present and what future I have, but my children's future and the future of my grandchildren and great-grandchildren, grandchildren yet unborn and undreamt of, has been deliberately screwed for 8 years by people who run out and use the franchise to try to kill America by voting for the likes of George W. Bush. And yes, in their millions, and there will be millions, in their millions, voting for Lumpy McHoover. So I got no time left for being civil. Tired of civil. Civil didn't work! Okay? Civil did not work. We have tried civil. Lots of us have tried civil. Not me so much, because I saw no. But there have been lots of people, you know, can't we just sit down and surely to goodness we can come to some level of agreement? And, you know, that's great that Barack Obama says those kinds of things, but that's because he has to appear above the fray. Make no mistake. It is my contention that he will be as hard as nails on those Repiglick and bastards when he gets into office as any one of us would be. I feel confident in saying that. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I don't know.
What?
Sleep. I can't get enough sleep for some reason. I slept about 15. I laid down and slept about 15 till 6.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, well, I don't know why I even said
I hope I don't put you back to sleep.
I hope you don't either. Usually it's the other stuff that puts me to sleep. But I had just a few little things I wanted to talk about. I'll talk about The View for one. Today, Joy... She said, "Oh, I saw the movie of W," and she said, "As a Democrat, I just really liked it." And she said, "I found out that Sarah Palin is so much like Bush." And
she's not as big a drunk and drug addict as he is she?
Well, I think, you know.
Well, yeah, who
or something, because you don't never tell the truth. And
well, and Juanita, we don't know what went on in any of those five schools that she attended, none of which she graduated from. Yeah, no.
But of course, Elizabeth said, "Oh, I just might puke." But anyway,
another one of those classy Repiglickins.
Yeah, she yesterday after the when they were talking about the debate, she had her little list about Obama and what all he has done. He's never explained about that guy, whatever his name is, the terrorist. But the thing is, it reminded me, it came to me, it was like when they were having all that about Bill Clinton, and they would say, "He just has to say, he has to tell this, and it didn't matter what he did, you know. What else was he going to do?" He finally said that he'd had an affair with her, that girl. But, you know, anyway, they're saying it about him. And I saw David Letterman last night. He had McCain on.
Right.
You know,
Yeah.
Anyway, they had Keith Olbermann there in case McCain didn't show up. But I like.
That's good. Did you catch Tina Fey on Letterman as well?
No.
Yeah, she was fielding the or responding to the criticism that has come from the weirdo right wing that somehow it's unfair.
What was that on?
Just in the last day or so.
Okay. Well, I don't watch him all the time.
That it was somehow unfair that she is doing send-ups of Sarah Palin.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a slur on women.
Oh, okay.
All of a sudden they're concerned with women's rights.
Oh, yeah. But anyway, I like David Letterman the way he does because he kind of gave him, one time I thought McCain was going to sock him or something, but you could tell he was holding back because he kind of pinned him down. I really can't give examples because I'd have to think about it. But I'm sure a lot of people saw it, and I'm sure it's on YouTube or whatever. I forgot.
Oh, YouTube, yeah.
YouTube, yeah. But anyway, anybody wants to watch it, I think Letterman is kind of like, it in a different way, he's like Jon Stewart. They have the ability to say things in a most amazing way, you know, and to interview people in a most amazing way, in my opinion. That's, I just really like them both for that. But, another thing that the other day that Elizabeth did was Joy was saying that something about she didn't like Hannity.
Right.
And, of course, then Wasserface goes all over, you know, about that. Because she was talking about him having that racist tone.
Oh, yeah, what's his name, Martin?
Yeah. And of course, Elizabeth, you know, that's her buddy, and she was just going on and on about, well, that was just an interview. That didn't have anything to do with him. And I was thinking, yeah, you're supposed to have been Rosie's friend, the ones you were working with, and when you were over at Fox and they said she hated U.S. soldiers, you didn't open your mouth.
Nope.
But she can't keep it closed about these other things. But you know, Bob, what I've noticed about Republicans, and I know you have too, but it drives me crazy, just like they will say stuff, and it don't matter how much they're repudiated, they'll just say it anyway. Like, for instance, last night on David Letterman's show, he asked him about the terrorist guy. And I'm sorry, I'm not being very...
Oh, William Ayers?
Yeah. And anyway, he said... Obama has just never explained his association with him. And David said, well, I felt like he did last night. Oh, no, you know. And then he asked him, said, what about your association with G. Gordon Liddy? And he said, I will explain anyone that I've been in contact with, you know. I will be honest about it.
And then didn't.
No. I thought that was cute because they had Keith Olbermann there just in case. And anyway, when...
Yeah, Olbermann on standby. What's Letterman calling that guy with that really big head?
Uh-huh. But he was there. And I think they said that startled McCain. But when McCain walked in, David said, can you stay? And he had a mat, though, before McCain dropped out of all the things he did before he did finally go to Washington, because it was a couple of days later. And his only excuse was that he screwed up.
And so is that what he's going to say if the economy, what was his phrase, if the economy craters again?
Yeah.
My friends, I screwed up.
But One thing, a question, that, this is it, a question that I would like to ask. I've never heard anybody discuss it. I'm sure they have. But they're always talking about that we don't need to tax these people, the, you know, the millionaires or whatever, because they create jobs. You know how they always say that?
Oh, sure.
Okay, I have a question. Why aren't they creating jobs now? Because they know if Obama gets in, they're going to be...
Well, that's a very, very, very observant and trenchant question, Juanita. And it goes hand...
It goes
hand in hand with this question of if John McCain, Lumpy McHoover, if he actually knows how to go get Osama bin Laden, why is he sitting on the information? Why isn't he picking up the phone? I mean, he can call George Bush anytime and say, listen, George, my friend, I know how to catch Osama bin Laden. And George will go, hey, really? You do? Tell me. And then he will. I mean, you know, sick the student loan secret police on him. Whatever the real plan is, George would listen. Dick would listen if his pacemaker's still working.
Yeah. Well, I remember when Nixon was running, and he said that he had the solution for any.
Exactly.
Any of it.
But I won't tell you unless you elect me.
Yeah.
It's a big secret.
And until his second term.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's what I wanted to ask, because I thought, well, why aren't they starting all these?
But you got to remember again, Juanita, the Republicans are con artists and frauds. And fascists and utterly, completely, contemptibly dishonest.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they say things like, you know, we're going to create jobs, what they mean is we're going to create things that look like jobs.
Yeah.
For instance, remember when they tried to create all those manufacturing jobs by reclassifying the dude that puts the mustard on the burger before he passes it to the dude that puts the pickle on the burger at McDonald's?
Right. Yes, I do. I heard that.
Yeah, they were going to be manufacturing jobs.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And then they created supervisory jobs by busting the nurses union and declaring that any nurse who asked some other nurse to go and empty a bedpan was therefore a supervisor. Well, they created jobs there, by golly. They just weren't, you know, real jobs. So
they created jobs overseas for the kids.
Oh, they created lots of overseas jobs, sure.
They
created jobs for the right-wing thugs who go around putting bullets behind the ears of union organizers in Colombia. Big job creation there.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
They won't back down on what they say. He kept on there, you know, about, and how much more can Obama say?
The answer is he can never say enough.
Right. Just like Clinton couldn't say enough.
Right. Exactly.
It never would satisfy them.
And the reason for that is because at the base of the dark and creepy and swampy thing that passes for a soul in a Republican, they hate this country. They just hate this country.
Growing up, I always tried to see the good in anybody.
Yeah.
And
I've been there. That's the way I was raised.
Yeah. And I think Southerners are really that way. And you don't want to say nothing bad. You can't believe it. And then you get out in the world, you get tossed to the wolves, and you have to learn the hard way.
It's the thumper rule from Bambi, Juanita. If you can't say anything nice, don't say nothing at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you notice I say I don't like people, and I used to would have never said that. But I don't have to like them, you know. God didn't tell me to like everybody.
And see, that's the same thing with forgiveness. Even though I've gotten behind it, and even though I'm a recovering Southern Baptist, some of that stuff stuck. I acknowledge it.
Yeah.
And one of the things that stuck was this idea of forgiveness.
Yeah.
Forgive others as Christ has forgiven us. Remember that part?
Oh, yeah.
But there's other parts in front of and behind it. And that is that the essence of forgiveness is couched in repentance. And I have yet to meet very few, if any, Bush voters from 2000 and 2004 who come up and say, Bob, I voted for Bush. I repent of it. Forgive me. Because if they did that and they were sincere, then I would be called upon to forgive them.
Yeah.
But they don't do that, and I'm not called upon for it, and I don't forgive them.
Well, the thing is that I think we have the wrong, we've been taught the wrong idea, and it's been implanted for so long about what real love is and what even including real forgiveness is. We don't really understand what it is. It's not like, oh, I love you, I'll do anything in the world for you. No. I forgive anything, just stomp me in the face any time you want to, and I'll forgive you. And I think we've got the wrong, you know, it's so implanted in us. And I'm speaking from personal experience. You don't lay down like a doormat for these people. These people.
No, because they'll stomp you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I had to learn the hard way. I used to wonder why different things would happen to me on jobs and all. And I had all kind of ideas about it. You know, for a long time I thought there was something about me that people didn't like or these bosses didn't like or whatever. And then I thought, you know, after a while, even when I was involved in Robertsonism, I thought it was Satan, you know. And then I thought it was the other person, you know, it just... But I know there's a lot of jealousy in the world, and you think, well, who's going to be jealous of me? But you'd be surprised who's jealous. And I think a lot of it's that. But, you know, it's a complicated thing. That's what I think. I don't think that there's anything. See, that to me, God is. He's it. The rest of it, this whole world is bad. I saw, like, last night on Conan, I sound like I watch all this different stuff, but sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. But I love Conan O'Brien. And they have these people that live with wolves. And I was thinking, I was hoping he would ask them about what did they think about Sarah Palin. You know, the practice of, you know, they had them on helicopters. And then... Is it their ear they cut off and they give...
No, they cut off their left foreleg.
Their leg, okay.
Yeah.
And these wolves are just absolutely amazing people.
Wolves are people, too.
Maybe they're more people than we are. but I think we've got the wrong attitude about animals and all, because they didn't deserve what we did to them, you know, like... You were talking about when they take the mountains down and the bears are in their lair with their babies and they can't get out.
Right.
That breaks my heart. But that's what mankind has done. And these evil people, these people.
Right. And, you know, these evil thugs that do that kind of stuff. Well, that's the cost of progress.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, tell the bear cubs about your progress. Oh, I'm sorry, the dead.
I like what you said to that group you saw last night, the butt crackers.
Yeah.
I like what you said.
Oh, we got a new name, Juanita. You've invented a new name.
Well, they, when you told them why they quit aborting all these babies over in Iraq, I thought that was great.
Yeah, well, and the thing, and they had no answer. They had no answer.
They don't think about that.
Oh, no, they're only concerned. And I can't remember the gentleman's name. I've really, really, the name of the book is Moore, M-O-R-E. I've got to get that man on this program.
Oh, at the meeting?
Yeah, that I saw speaking. Moore, because of what he said about women and their right to self-determinism and what happens when women are given the right to control their reproductive
I've got a women's medical book that I bought probably 30 years ago, and it was talking about, I don't know how late in the turn of the 20th century, that women weren't even considered to be human.
Well, that's true. Well, when women were... Look, that's the thing. That's what makes hypocrites of these people, Juanita, who want to talk... Juanita, do you know... Sorry, you opened a door for me. Just bear with me for a minute, Juanita.
Okay.
Do you know that the organization here in West Virginia that is allied with James... beat children till they cry real tears Dobson. The West Virginia group affiliated with him is screaming. I mean, they are screaming bloody murder for the governor of West Virginia, who is, in fact, one of those people who thinks he knows better about a woman's insides than women themselves do. They're screaming for him to call the legislature back into special session solely for the purpose of writing a bill that defines marriage as the union of one man and one woman. Thousands and thousands of dollars of my tax dollars, West Virginian's tax dollars, to waste legislative time on that garbage when, in fact, and this is why I bring all this up, when, in fact, the very definition of marriage has been, from almost the inception of the idea of marriage, a property transfer of a female human being from her father to the guy who will force sex onto her.
Mm-hmm.
It has been deemed a property transfer, and they want to call that something sacred. The hell with them, you know?
Well, they don't know what sacred is. You know, sacred would be to love the gays, you know. Then they can make problems that aren't problems. And how much have the Republicans done about the abortions that do, you know, how much have they done?
Well, they don't want to. See, if they actually get abortion outlawed, then all these anti-abortion groups, all these good-for-nothing lowlifes will be out of a job. They'll be off the gravy train. There won't be anything for them anymore. As a matter of fact, Nick and I were talking about that just today as we drove home. So you're absolutely right, Juanita.
Yes, I am, aren't I?
You certainly are.
But I'm not right wing.
No, I'm sorry, I did that all wrong. Juanita, you are correct.
Ah, okay.
Better?
Thank you.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
Okay, and I thought the, I don't know what you thought about the debate, but I thought it was, I liked all of them, really, because I saw things in them. It's not that I think that they were correctly done, but I saw things in them, you know, that made a difference to me.
Well, what I came away with is that Obama is busy looking presidential, looking like he's above the fray, looking like he can't be needled into saying something stupid. In other words, pointing out that he will be much more stable dealing with world crises and world leaders than that lumpy McHoover guy.
In other words, he doesn't react, he acts.
Yeah, exactly.
It took me years to understand what that meant.
And by the way, for anybody who's being driven crazy by my talk about this book, the name of the book is More, and the subtitle is Population, Nature, and What Women Want. It is by Robert Engelman, and he has done a tremendous
job. Ian.
E-N-G-E-L-M-A-N. E-N-G-E-L-M-A-N. Robert Engelman.
One thing that you made me think about you were talking about Obama being like presidential. You know, I didn't have a TV all the time available because I didn't own one. But when I was at my folks, every time you would see John Kennedy when he was running,
mm-hmm.
always serious. He was always serious. You know, and he was a great wit. That didn't come up. Now, I didn't, maybe not saw everything he did, but which you didn't get to back then. But every time he was on, I noticed he was very serious about things. And he would not say anything bad about Eisenhower.
Right.
And that, to me, I finally come to see one thing about Obama is very much Kennedy-like.
Maybe that's a mark of Obama's intelligence, that he is actually studying history and trying to learn from it, you know, based upon that old adage, Juanita, that those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it.
Correct.
Well, Juanita,
you
have a wonderful evening.
You too.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I enjoy being correct, and you were correct as well.
Okay.
Take care, Juanita.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. And just if you want to read a little bit more about this magnificent book, More the Book. MoreTheBook.org. I will do everything in my power here as soon as, well, yeah, another thing to add to the list. You know, coffee breaks over, back on your heads, to get Robert Engelman on the program. Let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Hey, Preston, how are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm just clicking over to more of the book on Amazon, reading about it. It's getting rave reviews from other customers, that's for sure. 5 stars from everybody.
Well, I haven't read it, but just getting to listen to the guy talk about it was pretty stirring.
And you heard him at that conference?
Yes, he was at the he was giving an address at the receptions for the Society of Environmental Journalists.
Great. Did you happen to notice if anybody was recording his talk?
I imagine his publisher might have.
Okay.
But there were no cameras there. No.
Okay. You know, that's another thing where we could develop more of a progressive media. You know, getting 8, 9, 10 different cameras at events like that, people who broadcast over cable access television and, you know, make DVDs and videos and so forth. You know, just spreading these messages around, I think, more efficiently. You know, and sometimes I think people are afraid of, you know, what's going to be the relationship with the publisher and how easy, you know, are you even going to be able to tape things? And you never know, but sometimes I've actually done this for a while, for the past 5 years or so, and people typically are very open to it. Authors want to get their message out, and it helps publicize the work that they're doing. So, I don't know, just an idea.
Well, and not a bad idea at all. You'd have to have the cooperation of the publishers and stuff, but it would be well worth the effort. And this winner of the, 2 nights ago, this winner of the Rachel Carson Award, and for the life of me, An Unnatural History of the Sea. That's what it was called.
An Unnatural History of the Sea.
Yeah, I think that was what it was. And, you know, to win the Rachel Carson Award, you got to think that it's probably pretty profound. And I thumbed through it, and I just wanted to sort of go sit in a corner and read it for a while.
Wow.
But again, I've got to get in touch with these folks and try to get them on to talk about what they're doing.
Yeah, that would be great. And I think I'll probably kind of look around and see where else they might be speaking. I have friends in other parts of the country that do that same sort of videotaping lectures. Radio Free Maine is one project, and others. I don't know. I think I mentioned alternative radio to you before, but
yes, you did. And
yeah.
Oh, by the way, the author is Callum Roberts, Callum Roberts, The Unnatural History of the Sea.
I imagine that has a lot to do with the devastation being wrought on the sea, or.
It's the inaugural gifting of the award, and Callum Roberts is a professor of marine conservation at the University of York in England.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just reading from the blurb. He explores the long and colorful history of commercial fishing, taking readers around the world and through the centuries to witness the transformation of the seas.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, one of the critical things we were discussing, Preston, down at the Environmental Defense Fund room, was the issue of overfishing and whether one may sustainably eat seafood.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a great little handout that I imagine is probably on their website somewhere too, but a consumer's guide or a purchaser's guide to what sushi is most sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, liberals, we like our sushi.
Yeah, and you know, so do people in East Africa. You know, that's their livelihood.
Right.
And these giant trawlers of these corporations are destroying their livelihood.
Well, that's the absolute truth.
And there is a way to do it sustainably. They know it. They've been doing it for generations. You know, it's not an inevitability that human interaction with nature is destructive and, you know, sapping its life. at all.
And that's, you know, that's a theme that I've been exploring and just trying to work through in my own mind lately, Preston. Mm-hmm. The idea that that going to a more sustainable way of living is not and should not be deemed a sacrifice.
Right, exactly. That's a huge point.
That it is, it should be celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
It should be engaged in joyfully, with excitement, because what we have here is the ability to take older life ways, which we should reverence,
mm-hmm.
and engage them with modern technology, which will actually make them more and better than what they were. Classic case in point. A couple of nights ago, the night before I went to Roanoke for this meeting, News Ninja Gene sent me a story about a miniaturized wind turbine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a vertical wind turbine that looks like a square box. It's the inventor is an Iranian gentleman. And it's based on something called a Persian wind catcher.
Yeah, I read something about that.
This thing is fascinating to me because, one, it can generate 5 kilowatts of electricity. Two, it is suitable for installation on top of skyscrapers and so forth. I may have already mentioned this, but I mean, it just really grabbed me. But I went way, 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 way down in the article, and I found this little thing that just spoke to me as the image of what we're talking about right now, Preston. And that was the reference that these things are going into mass production. And guess where they're building them? They are building them in like a 100-year-old windmill factory in Nebraska.
That's right. This is
not new. This is merely an updating of technology that was abandoned when we got so stupid as to think that we could just eat the world.
Yep. And so it's wonderful to see this sensibility, you know, this human sensibility pop up right in our midst like this. And how poetic, you know, that it's taking place in an old windmill factory in Nebraska.
Well, exactly. That's the image that just jumped all over me. And, you know, that's red state Nebraska. You know, oh, they don't want anything to do. They don't want anything to do with, you know, being a tree-hugging environmentalist. Except it's going to bring some really good jobs that pay nicely.
Right. Yeah. Maybe being concerned about the environment isn't so, wacko-ish after all.
No, that's the thing about these right-wingers. It's profitable.
Yep. Right. But your earlier point about this, that it doesn't have to be a sacrifice. I mean, there's this myth of scarcity that they build up to try to frighten us into staying in with certain patterns.
Hallelujah. Yes.
And that's what I thought was so thoughtful about this newer environmental magazines, sustainability magazines, that started publishing about a year or two ago. And they call themselves Plenty Magazine. And I think that's their message. You know, this is a world of abundance, especially when you're in right relation. I mean, it's amazing how we've done all this damage to the earth with the constant poisoning and the overhunting and fishing and destruction, but we're still here, so many of us. I mean, again, what abundance the world must contain.
Oh, absolutely. And the idea, you know, what you mentioned in the fear, Preston, is, oh, my God, it's so true. Because can you imagine, and this is maybe, you know, we're processing. This is how liberal talk works.
Yeah.
You know, no marching orders. We're going to process and we'll figure some stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
If you consider what an average family spends paying into the industrial power grid, whose costs are externalized to society, vis-a-vis things like, you know, coal-fired power plants. But if you just consider the sheer, you know, I go write a check every month cost of the power bill, how is it sacrificing to pay less?
Right. It's a sacrifice to the coal company executives.
Precisely. The only people that are going to be sacrificing are the Don Blankenswine, who hasn't figured out that they don't put U-Hauls behind hearses yet.
Yep. Yep, it's a sacrifice to revenue growth, and that's forbidden to the free market. The fundamentalists.
It's forbidden to us. You know, actually having sustainable homes that we can pass, yea, verily, from one generation unto another, that is forbidden unto us.
Yep. And I guess it's their fiduciary responsibility. I mean, even in our legal system, these executives, you know, if they didn't pursue that, you know, profit maximization, I guess they'd be sued.
You're exactly right on top of it. Because that's why I've said from time to time that the idea of corporate or business ethics is a joke.
Right.
Because and it goes back to that great old story about Henry Ford.
Yeah.
Wanted to pay his workers more. And his board ganged up on him and made him not do it. And the court agreed.
Yeah.
Because the only duty that a corporation has is to its stockholders, and the only duty it has to its stockholders is to maximize share profits.
Yeah.
And that hasn't changed.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, so much also depends on what it is that a person's selling or that an organization is selling. You know, as corporations evolve, you know, not all of them are devolving into more high-tech weapon systems. Others are evolving towards things for human needs. And hopefully the executives of that, you know, micro-generation wind turbine company will also find ways to maximize their profits and, you know, put it to good use in that field of operation. You know, I'd like to see nonprofit organizations doing their own, you know, development, and NGOs and communities. Schools actually are doing it, not so much to make money, but it does save them money, their electricity bills. And so, you know, I think private sector stuff can happen. It is happening, public sector stuff as well. So we'll see. We'll see. Plenty Magazine, by the way, speaking of success, they have a subscriber base of around 200,000 people.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's not insignificant at all. It's a shame they don't get publicity on, like, Fox News, you know, or wherever. You know, hopefully they can start supporting a talk radio or something like that to make publicity for themselves.
Precisely, because this is, well, they're getting some great publicity right now.
Yeah.
And they owe you a debt of gratitude, if not a year's free subscription, because, you know, and we joke and we laugh. There's truth in that.
Well,
it's a different kind of model.
Yeah.
But if we have these conversations, it's out of these dialogues, out of these discussions, that the better ideas emerge. And as opposed to the authoritarian model that says that somebody at the top declares what it shall be, like Moses on up on the mountain.
Yeah.
And that everybody else, their only job is to say yes, sir, and go do it.
Yep. It's amazing how that happens. You know, we have a very authoritarian radio host here in Denver who, even people that call him and agree with him, he will, like, badger and ridicule, and it's amazing to watch. It really is amazing, the authoritarianism. And the guy is just like, oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, sir. Sorry, sorry. I mean, it was kind of pathetic.
Oh, yeah.
Hannity, he really needs to be called out, not so much on the questions he's asking necessarily, although those are very deceitful and manipulative, but his behavior, his constant interrupting people, yelling over them, you know, 50 questions thrown at people, it is like an interrogation. That's what needs to be called out. His interrogative behavior is totalitarian. And, but anyway, also back to the DVDs and producing our own media, recording talks, passing them around. So needed. I noticed that some group that's spreading bigotry towards Muslims put 28 million copies of a film called Obsession into.
Yes.
You know about this.
Yes. And that was right about the same time that the chemical weapon of mass destruction attack took place on the Ohio Mosque.
Mm-hmm.
It had been included in the newspaper shortly before that, and it was at Friday evening prayers when a couple of little girls in the basement went to saw some shadowy figures outside, opened the and looked out an open window at them, and were sprayed with pepper spray that sickened everyone in the room. And just shortly before, to be fair, Preston, the folks at that mosque did not blame that DVD. But I think that's because they weren't in a position to blame it. But it seems to me that the connection is more than obvious, especially in light of the fact that the police the following Monday announced, we can find no evidence of a hate crime here.
Well, there's certainly trends. I subscribe to CARE's mailing list, and I can't even keep up with all the, you know, violations of people's peace, stemming from this incredible bigotry. You know, if not Muslims, then gays, and if not them, you know, union teachers and unions. Now they're throwing a lot of heat at the University of Nebraska. Again, back to socialist Nebraska, its real roots coming up. They apparently, somebody at the university or a group of people invited William Ayers to speak, which I thought was good. And I'd really like to see an entire hour-long presentation by someone like that. And I certainly would come away disagreeing with him on many things. Yet, he carries a lot of insight. And they're caricaturing him on the right so successfully. And the left liberals are getting very defensive about it. Like, oh, no. Obama's, you know, condemned him for this and that, but never talking about the real person, you know, letting the caricature kind of exist and trying to distance themselves from it instead of saying, talk about the real person. And same with Acorn. We're doing the same thing. We're kind of like, well, distance yourself. We're not really getting to know the organization. And the caricature can be sustained that way, even by liberal actions. I don't know. Being clear on that?
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. It makes perfectly good sense to me. But that's the way they have to operate. Yeah, there's not a lot of difference between that, Preston, and the idea of, you know, Joe the plumber, who turns out to be a complete caricature of what a real plumber is.
Right.
Their business, these right-wing authoritarians, their business is fraud.
Yeah.
Because there's no way to there's no way for them to honestly address an issue. But speaking of making a caricature of someone, I don't know if you saw this. One of the things that really got under my skin in the last debate was the automatic de facto demonization of Venezuela.
Yep.
Now here's an example. Here's a case where a country, regardless of what one thinks of Hugo Chavez, I mean, I know of people down there who backed him wholeheartedly, who are backing away from some of that to an extent because they feel like he's gone too far.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, however, we're talking about an entire nation that is resource rich that is rejecting the right of a power like the United States to utterly and completely control their destiny. The right to attempt to control one's destiny seems to me to be part and parcel of the nature of being a sovereign nation.
Yep. And what's going on there is so much more than, you know, Hugo Chavez. I mean,
we're talking about the manifest anger of ExxonMobil.
Yep. And, you know, the right wing here, they can't talk about what they're doing because they're serving elite interests. And by definition, the general public would be against it. So they've always got to deceive us about what their real agenda is. And they're in Venezuela. They're working in solidarity with the elite there. And they were very much involved with the coup attempt in 2002.
Yes.
That temporarily put Chavez out of office. You know, people thought he probably was going to be killed like so many others. But the people rose up. They came down from the barrios and from throughout society, except for the top 20%. They hated it, but the other 80% rose up in the streets, surrounded the Capitol, and demanded that he be put back in office. The wealthy were so put on the defensive that they said, bring him back.
Yeah, they dared not contravene. Sure.
Yeah.
And I have to, so, yeah, I think you share that sense that just de facto declaring, I mean, if George Bush could have gotten away with it, he would have declared, if he hasn't already at some point, he probably has, and I'm wondering if I've forgotten it, Hugo Chavez to be some sort of a member of the auxiliary axis of evil.
Yeah.
But you gotta, you know, you've got to give it to Hugo Chavez. The man has a profound sense of humor.
Yes, he does.
There's an article out. I found it over at Bart Cop today. And this is just the excerpt that Bart printed on his page with the link. Socialist Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez mocked what Bart Cop calls Dear Monkey as a comrade today, saying he was a hardline leftist for his intervention of major private banks in the U.S. financial crisis.
Right.
Chavez ridiculed Bush for his plan for the federal government to take equity in American banks, despite the U.S. right-wing's criticism of Venezuelan nationalizations. Quote, Bush is to the left of me now, Mr. Chavez told an audience. Comrade Bush announced he will buy shares in private banks. Comrade Bush.
Right.
You can't hear that and not giggle.
That's right. Yeah, I saw a documentary about that coup attempt by a couple of Irish videographers who were just there kind of doing a documentary on the society, but they found themselves right in the middle of this coup attempt. And yeah, the stuff, the mud they've been hurling in the direction of Venezuela has been amazing. But actually, the Chavez administration helped to... They declared like they're 20 miles to their shore or so, or 10 miles off limits to those big factory trawlers. See, that's the real agenda that's not spoken about. Again, it's corporate tyranny. They want that wealth of all those fish off the Venezuelan coast. And again, there are
all these people
there of the country. That's their livelihood. That's their culture, their tradition, their health. Yeah, and so they've made moves to protect it. And again, so the corporate tyrants can't stand that. So they sent out the dogs to start barking, Hannity, Rush, the whole crew. In fact, just today they mentioned Ayers. Ayers went down to Venezuela and supported the dictator Chavez. So they had the double play going on.
It's some sort of Tinker to Evers to Chance sort of sick, you're right, double play of smearness. Yeah.
There's a book out that talks about their strategies, Echo Chamber, Rush Limbaugh and the Conservative Media Establishment by Kathleen Hall Jamieson. And part of the product description talks about how Limbaugh, the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, and key players at Fox News share evidence, arguments, and tactical approaches in their defense of conservatism and their attack on its opponents. Let's see. Oh, yeah. The authors argue that these three news outlets disseminate Reagan-era conservatism. I think it's a misuse of the word conservatism, but it's elitism. But anyway... by creating a common rogues gallery of enemies, which they fight by forming an echo chamber, a bounded, enclosed media space that has the potential to both magnify the messages delivered within it and insulate them from rebuttal.
And some of that is what I've, the insulate from rebuttal part, Preston, is what I've talked about in the past in terms of not being able to win a debate with a, you know, The old saying, you can't win a war with a guy who buys ink by the barrel, and you can't win a debate with a guy who controls your right to speak. And that is exactly what she's talking about when she talks about insulating themselves from debate or disagreement. So,
yeah.
And by the way, I have to ask you, were you somewhat pleased by Obama's willingness in the debate to mention the slaughters of labor organizers in Colombia?
You know, was this the most recent debate?
Yes, yes.
I actually missed that. I didn't catch the whole thing, but...
Well, John McCain was trying to excoriate Obama for not supporting the Colombian Free Trade Agreement.
Okay.
And Obama responded by saying, look, it was a bad agreement. He said, I disagree on this, but he said, I supported the Peruvian Free Trade Agreement because there were labor protections and environmental protections in it. He said, there was no way I could support, I'm paraphrasing, I could support the Colombian Free Trade Agreement because they've got, the employers down there have these goon squads who go around killing, murdering labor organizers.
Wow, that's excellent. I disagree with the earlier comment about the Peruvian Free Trade Agreement being much better, but that's excellent that he made that other comment.
And that's the thing that gives me hope, Preston, is that this man clearly is capable of learning. We have had 8 years of a guy in the White House who not only is incurious, but is actively hostile to intellectual pursuits or attempts to educate himself in any way.
Yep. And Barack definitely is capable of learning. And then there's also the question of, you know, so much that he knows. How can we create the environment where he feels safe enough to say it? You know, he's around some pretty tough dudes right now. You know, some thugs for sure. And they put on a lot of pressure, intimidation and stuff. So again, creating a community in which all of us actually can find our courage or our voices again. And again, we need to create our own echo chambers, and we can do that. I was also pleased, actually, speaking of good developments, I was really pleased that Paul Krugman won the Nobel Prize for Economics. I mean, what a vast improvement from giving it to Milton Friedman. I actually saw a Friedman replay on C-SPAN this weekend. And
did that strike you as a form of expiation?
Actually, to be honest, I don't know that word.
The Nobel Committee making up for past sins, like what they did with Milton Friedman.
Yeah, maybe it is, and expiation and evolution. Eduardo Galeano, the Latin American writer, has this line about how the Nobel. Something like the committee gave Milton Friedman, or Friedman's economics earned him the Nobel Prize, and it brought us the Pinochet dictatorship. And, but listening to him on C-SPAN, I was just like, this is so misinformative, and ridiculing our government again, and the public investment in developing so many of our industries, just pushing that aside. Ignoring his own assistance that he got through the government that he hates so much to go to Rutgers. He got money from the state.
And right, and but decrying any good that government can do. You know, the other night, Preston, one of the callers to the program, and I think it was Albert from Wisconsin, mentioned this development of metal glass. And it's mind-boggling.
Okay.
And in turn, I got an email about it from Tom out in California. Sent me I think it may be Scientific American or one of the, I don't have it in front of me, about these developments. And lo and behold, you know, they're coming from the halls of academia. Contrary to what the Republicans constantly say, developments are not coming from the private sector. They're coming from the places where we give geniuses the freedom to be geniuses without being tethered to the need to show an initial profit on it. And this liquid metal thing is just, it's beyond my poor little mind's capacity to explain, but they've made metal foam. No, with you know, just by what they do with it, creating tremendous tensile strength, incredible lightness, and the stuff is incredibly expensive right now. But you know what? So was the first iPod.
Definitely. I mean, it's amazing the innovations taking place. So again, these people say, oh no, we can't do solar, or that's not feasible. No, nonsense.
So in other words, we can't do things. Well, look at the thought crossed my mind, Preston, about windmills. And, you know, windmills are very close to my heart right now because of what we're trying to accomplish. I'm not doing the hard work. The folks at Coal River Mountain Watch are doing the ass-busting work on this. But what's trying to be accomplished with this Coal River Wind Project, and that's not, you know, that's, again, that's not some sort of new space age marvel. It's what we were talking about earlier. It is a return to a refinement of an old proven technology. And I got to thinking about it, Preston, and I thought about, you know, I thought about windmills. And then because of the article that I read about these Persian wind catcher turbines that can go on roofs, I got to thinking about and the fact that it's going to be built in a 100-year-old windmill factory in Nebraska. So there's those windmills that were used to literally pump water up to irrigate crops and feed animals in places that had no running streams. So that took me to another step, and lo and behold, I'm thinking about the water screw that was said to have been invented by Archimedes.
Mm.
You know, that's the way human progress works.
Yeah.
We take something that works and we build on it. We don't just utterly abandon it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless there's something, and you know, you can, you know, I joke about people who are anti-progress, anti-technology as being, you know, buggy whip manufacturers. But that's not entirely true, and I'm somewhat faultable for that. But by and large, the nature of human development has been a technology that allows technology to be built upon.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, on top of what's going on in the universities, there's what's going on in some of the military spending. It's not all depleted uranium munitions and stuff like that. There's some worthwhile stuff going on with military spending.
There is, but I don't know if you heard the beginning of the program. This big 4x8-foot poster that we saw at one of the tablings at the Society for Environmental Journalism, journalists just absolutely really did make me just want to run screaming around the room, tearing my hair and clothing and stuff. Sustain the Mission, the Army Sustainability Command.
Okay.
This drives me nuts because they're talking about all the things they're doing to make the Army sustainable, but at the same time, I mean, come on, Preston, it's the Army. You know, their job is their misguided job is slaughtering other people in the name of corporate America.
Yep.
And, you know, we're spending money on a sustainability command at the same time that we aren't even trying to figure out a way to clean up the toxic waste dumps that we've turned entire nations into via depleted uranium.
Yep, for sure.
It's like some sort of institutional psychosis, if that makes any sense.
There is a psychosis. And then we get hypnotized. They have us all saying, you know, thank you for your service to the country. I mean, it's a manipulation. I mean, people are trying to be polite, I think, and you can honor the person's individual experience, but let's not be deceptive. Let's not deceive ourselves about it. It's service to the power elite. We need to be clear on that. And you're right. The uses of what's being sustained exactly, domination, imperialism. Yeah, huge problem. Nevertheless, I think it's still useful to bring up things like one of the largest solar farms in the world is Nellis Air Force Base.
Sure.
And those developments often trickle out into the society. In fact, that's
well, certainly. I mean, what we did with the Apollo program technologically trickled out and down. I mean, that's one of those places where the idea of downward trickle works. But by the same token, it also has a negative impact insofar as I was talking to someone who has a tremendously higher comprehension of the technological stuff involved with it. Had it not been for our government's paranoid insistence on classifying stuff, you know, we've had a digital revolution in terms of photographic imagery and video imagery, right?
Yeah.
We would have, this person who was either quoting someone or speaking him or herself, we would have had digital cameras in our homes and made unnecessary the relatively intensively unenvironmental film process of creating films. We would have had digital cameras in our hands much sooner had it not been for the insistence of the government on keeping the technology classified. Because NASA, I was told, had been using digital imaging technology for decades before this stuff was ever let out on the market.
Yeah.
And I remember my old, his name was Professor Seymour, who in 1984 looked at all of us sitting in my journalism photography class and saying, kids, you're going to tell me I'm nuts. But I promise you, in your lifetimes, you will see photographs stored on a little chip no larger than my thumbnail. Hundreds of photographs. And we all just sat there and, huh, what? Because he was engaged in teaching us how to use a darkroom and how to process black and white film. He said, I'm not kidding. It's gonna happen. It's all, that's what, why I was reminded. He said, it already exists.
Yeah. I actually, there's an element of magic about it, it seems like, or, you know, alchemy for sure. And, recently I had to get a new computer and, my other one after about 5 years or so just kind of died out, you know.
That's about as much as you can expect. Five years.
Yeah, and I got a Dell, actually, made in Round Rock, Texas, which I didn't know, but I was kind of glad to hear that. Hopefully the workers are treated better than, you know, how they are in other countries.
Well, and technically what they mean by made in Round Rock, Texas is that it was assembled in Round Rock, Texas.
Okay, yeah, exactly.
Because the componentry, I don't care how hard you try. But, you know, Americans have jobs doing that, and that's important.
And, you know, other people in other countries need jobs too. Again, it's just what are the conditions, you know?
What are the conditions? What is the pay? And that's the ultimate debate that centers around the idea of free trade. And that's why I have so much admiration for Dennis Kucinich when he said, "Listen, it's not about free trade; it's about fair trade."
Yep.
Because the only people that the trade is the way it's been envisioned, the only people that the trade is free for are the people who are profiting by it, not the people who are literally giving away their labor to make it happen.
Yep. And again, that's been another movement, you know, this fair trade movement. You see it in more, you know, in coffee and, you know, some clothing items here and there.
When I was down in Berea, Kentucky, I saw it manifested in chocolate.
Great. Wonderful.
So, you know.
Oh, actually, there's something else I wanted to say.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Computer issue.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I apologize.
That's okay. I got a new kind of, like, operating system, I guess. It's called Vista. And I had Windows XP before.
Right. This is the Windows, arguably, well, a lot of people are unhappy with it.
Yep.
But it's the next generation from XP. What's interesting, though, is, and Peter brought this out on his show some months back, they did that sort of Pepsi versus Coke blind taste test challenge.
Uh-huh.
And Microsoft went out and took Vista and said, and this was after a whole bunch of negative publicity about it. They took it and they called it, canned milk. And did a blind taste test, you know, which one do you prefer? And routinely people, I love that, as long as it wasn't called Vista, because there had been such a a created backlash against it. Now, I've got it on a laptop. And I've had my issues. What do you think of it, Preston?
Well, when the guy was putting it in, a person who I like a lot, actually, computer person, I asked him about that, and he said, well, if you don't do really complicated things like, maybe editing videos on your computer or stuff like that, more sophisticated actions, then it's usually not a problem. And I was like, I just use it to surf the web, email, stream radio, stuff like that, basically. And he's like, yeah, it shouldn't be a problem then. And initially it was fine, and there's a lot that I like about it. But I'm having this one issue where I just can't connect as quickly. Like, I'll have to take two different routes to get to my email folder. And then today a new thing started where I went to write a new message, and I got that message again. This is disconnected. This site or whatever is disconnected. Yet I can still stream. The rest of the computer is operating fine, but it'll just be these moments where I can't reply to an email. I can't create a new email. I can't get to my email folder. I'm like, what?
It's like, yeah, that asshole. Would be annoying in the extreme. And I've seen issues myself on the machine that we have here. That, for instance, if I try to set it up to do a radio show remotely, the way that Vista treats audio is
okay.
Annoying in the extreme. And what they did, they took stuff and they moved it around where it wasn't supposed to be. Every stuff that you'd gotten used to being in one place in XP is somewhere else in Vista.
Yeah.
If you ask Microsoft, it ups the security. It makes it more secure. Blah blah blah. It makes the system more stable. Yada yada yada.
That appealed to security again.
Yeah.
In fact, when I went to get my, I was following this chain of things to get this, get some ideas about what the issue could be. And one of the last lines was something about the security department. I'm like, we need to open a, this is a pain in the ass department, and close and address some of these annoying issues that are developing around alleged security needs. I spoke with, I called in last night into your program. I wasn't sure if it was live or not.
Right.
And I spoke with Agnes briefly.
And she told me she had spoken with you, yes.
Yeah, and we were talking about email issues and how, we have our suspicions, or at least I certainly do. I don't want to speak for Agnes, but suspicions about this, how we get barraged with all this spam, mm-hmm. and where it's coming from exactly. The internet and email can be such a powerful communication tool, and certainly, again, the power elite, they see these opportunities we have. I could see some of these spam campaigns being kind of interference operations.
Sure, and that's not. Just when you mentioned this, it compelled me to open my spam folder.
Okay.
And the one of the other frustrating things is that with a new system, you have to teach it all over again what's spam and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
So I see a couple of emails right now that I've got to tell it to mark it as, not being spam when it sees it again. But apart from that, let's see, some subject lines. Debt consolidation for tenants. Organics are in, I am out. Tax debt. Craps terms. Debt solution. Casino gambling. Top secret fat loss secret.
Mm-hmm.
Tax, travel.
Niagara, didn't you get a... At least a couple of bags.
No, but I've got get your hair problems fixed with Rogaine.
Okay. A lot of those companies are, there's a politics to what they're selling and how they sell it. And, we don't get spammed by the windmill companies or usually or something
nope,
like that.
No. Nope.
Let's
see. Is it you, Chelsea, here? And I guarantee you that if I open this, she is going to tell me she is a hot Russian girl who took those naked pictures just for me. Okay, right. It's opening. Hi, I'm sitting here in the internet cafe, found your email and decided to write, I am 25-year-old girl, I have a picture if you want to. No need to reply here as this is not my email, write me at.
Right.
Because I make certain assumptions, and that is that people aren't that stupid, are they? I mean, is there really some lonely, sexually frustrated, deprived guy out there who thinks that this girl really wrote to him, that there's some sort of internet email address phone book? Nick Regalado, quit pointing to yourself.
and people, you know, they're into their things, you know, and I'm like, whatever. But, you know, I think there's an element of it that is for sales and that can make sales. On the other hand, I do think it has this other prerogative, this other agenda of just being interference. And, you know, people end up losing their, you know, having to switch email accounts, email addresses. And then, again, that's another thing that leads to communication breakdown, isolation. You know, people constantly changing their cell phones, you know, the way that market has been imposed. They're not free markets. They're constructed and manipulated in all sorts of ways.
They are manipulated markets, absolutely.
Yeah, and so, you know, people need to create new cell phone numbers. Again, people losing touch with their communities. And but on the other hand, you know, it's certainly not just gloom and doom and authoritarian corporate matrix control. There's people are using their technologies as best they can, and oftentimes in incredible ways. You know, wonderful things like Common Dreams website, where I was able to learn about some activists in West Virginia doing civil disobedience. I guess 11 of them were arrested. And
In fact, Preston, Nick and I were talking about that just today. What are they referring to them as, Nick?
The Dominion 11.
The Dominion 11, exactly. And the authoritarian side of things is trying to hit them with everything they've got, including, how did they phrase it, Nick?
Unlawful assembly.
Well, unlawful assembly. No. Yeah. Inciting to unlawful assembly.
That's right.
Or maybe that was it. Encouraging unlawful assembly, Preston.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once upon a time, that would have been laughed out of a court in the United States. A prosecutor would not dare to have filed that, because even the prosecutor would have known, you know, no, come on, this is, you know, because you want to talk about incitement? Visit a McCain-Palin rally.
Yeah, no, good point.
You know, you want to talk about incitement? Let's talk about what Michael Savage and Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly said in their books that were found in the possession of the guy who went in and shot up the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist congregation. That's incitement. But I have yet to see any indictments dropped for that.
Let's talk about the DVD obsession.
There you go.
Which our pilots are watching and being encouraged to believe in.
Oh, by the way, a little bit of a paradigm shift along the lines of some of the stuff that you do talk about from time to time, Preston. Our blogger, Texas Betsy, sent this along to me. Apparently, a fairly conservative talk radio host out of your beloved Philly has endorsed Barack Obama.
Oh, really?
And you may have seen him on the cable network shows, Michael Smirkanish.
I've seen him here and there, and he seems to be kind of a mix of.
Well, he was a real attack dog too in some ways, but yeah. this is his quote. He's got an op-ed coming in the Philadelphia Inquirer, and he said, "I've decided my conclusion comes after reading the candidates' memoirs and campaign platforms, attending both party conventions, interviewing both men multiple times, and watching all primary and general election debates. John McCain is an honorable man who has served his country well, but he will not get my vote. For the first time since registering as a Republican 28 years ago, I'm voting for a Democrat for president. I may have been an appointee in the George H.W. Bush administration and master of ceremonies for George W. Bush in 2004, but last Saturday I stood amidst the crowd at an Obama event in North Philadelphia." And the other one that came out, Preston, that absolutely just, poor Eugene Finnerman's lovely wife had to get out the smelling salts. or the Edie's ice cream. I'm not sure which works better in Eugene's case. He sent me along a little note today. Your RDA of Irony from FinnermanWorks.com.
Okay.
And one gets the idea that he was simply floored. And it, you know, it takes a whole lot to really, really sort of make Eugene go sideways on all of this stuff. But he noted that the Chicago Tribune has endorsed Barack Obama. I mean, that's like a sign of the end times.
You know, there's definitely dissent, you know, within the ranks of rightism. And I noticed, I don't know his motivation exactly, but I noticed Britt Hume, apparently he resigned and was tired of it, and Glenn Beck is going to move in his place.
Glenn Beck is moving into Britt Hume's place?
If I understood the radio report correctly, yeah.
You know, it's interesting you would mention Glenn Beck because we had just a few minutes to turn the television on in the hotel room, Nick and I, and lo and behold, it was during Wolf Blitzer's show on CNN, and he announced that Jack Cafferty was on vacation. But that's okay, America, because filling in for Jack is Glenn Beck.
And he's such a clown. In a way, it's like I'm glad they're being. I don't know.
He's not fit to hold Jack Cafferty's and Jack's no liberal. Okay, he's annoyed the daylights out of me on a number of occasions. But the guy has a real past as a real journalist.
Uh-huh.
And Glenn Beck's not fit to hold his necktie or his fingerless typing gloves or whatever it is that old school journalists have. I just found what it was. It was actually, it wasn't on your RDA of Irony. It was just a note that Eugene dropped me. You'll get a kick out of this. Dear Bob, the Chicago Tribune has endorsed Barack Obama. Yes, the same Chicago Tribune that still advocates neutrality in World War II. The same Chicago Tribune that has John Birch Day at Wrigley Field, free bobbleheads of Joseph McCarthy to the first 500 ticket holders. That Chicago Tribune has endorsed Barack Obama. Yes, I am amazed.
Interesting. I think some other dissension in the ranks. I don't know if you noticed Defense Secretary Robert Gates, end of September in the LA Times. He talked about how, in opposition to Donald Rumsfeld's belief that high technology advances would do all these wonderful things to, make war better. Gates said, quote, be modest about what military force can accomplish and what technology can accomplish. And he went on to say that wars are, quote, inevitably tragic, inefficient, and uncertain, and look askance at idealized triumphalist or ethnocentric notions of future conflict.
That doesn't sound like a Republican anymore. Are all these people who were brought on for ideological reasons, are they daring to stick a toe outside the neocon fence now, Preston?
Now and again, I'm certainly looking for it and hoping for more of it. You know, I recently watched the documentary Sir No Sir about the absolutely vital and important GI movement to end the war in Vietnam,
mm-hmm.
Against all Indochina. It was remarkable, the resistance, and that they turned out. And I don't know, even some upper, higher-ranking people did some good things. So certainly still looking for people in the system, to try to shake things up a bit. In fact, I had a lot of military librarians contact me about those tapes, those videotapes I was distributing, a lot of Noam Chomsky stuff too, Angela Davis,
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of them were doing kind of like their own intel, finding out what social movements, what they're saying, that kind of thing. But at the same time, I know I have allies within that system because they'd write me and be like, you know, we'd like to have some non-right-wing fresh air here for our library. And I heard people in the military are, a lot of them admire a radical left-wing thought.
And why wouldn't they? Look where they come from. You know, the officer corps may be made up, you know, especially as Mikey Weinstein has documented so thoroughly, the officer corps, Preston, may be made up of people who have been radicalized by the fundamentalist right wing. But the enlisted men aren't. They are, you know, they come from places where they know what poverty really means. They come from up haulers, and they come from barrios, and they come from school districts where the best hope that you have is to survive the military and maybe get a usable skill.
Yep.
So they... It's again a case of us being presented with phony baloney information. This idea that the military is a monolithic right wing organization. They are people who are inducted and indoctrinated. And I understand this part of, you know, you can't run a military by committee. And it really does kind of have to be top down, although there are examples of it not being. The Union Army during the Civil War elected the enlisted men, elected their officers. At least on the on the small tactical level, if you had a great sergeant, you could elect him lieutenant. It happened. Brevet and you know, even internal brevet promotions, things like that. But the first thing they inculcate is that you do your duty. Now, if it was me, I think I'd spend a little bit more time than the 2.5 minutes between chow and finally getting a shower after a 30-mile hike to explain the Nuremberg laws to them and illegal orders. But that's me.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an equally compelling argument from a military standpoint that you don't want a guy engaging in some sort of internal philosophical debate with himself when he or she is given an order, because that internal, not only could it lead to, you know, disaster somewhere out in the field, but it could also get that individual killed.
Mm-hmm. In fact, there's a radio show host here named Bob Newman. His host name's Gunny Bob. You know, he's a Marine.
Right. And not our Gunny intro, Bob.
No, a different one for sure. And for his promo, as he's leading into his show, you know, there's music playing, and then you hear kind of voices, snippets from scenes in movies. And at one point, someone says, "We follow orders, or people get killed." And there's a truth to that. But on the other hand, there's a truth to, they follow orders, and people get killed.
Yep.
And so.
There are real world, and it's, you can't just say, well, howdy do, this is, no. Black and white is not, no.
Yeah. There's another author who's definitely not a liberal guy. He taught at West Point, was a Vietnam veteran himself. Andrew Bacevich.
Yes.
Okay. My dad caught him on C-SPAN and was really impressed with what he was talking about. He lost his son in Iraq. His son was killed in Iraq. His son was a Marine as well. And he's having an influence, I think, on a lot of people who may not, you know, who just refuse to listen to Noam Chomsky because of, you know, whatever charge. But Andrew Bacevich, they listen to. A book recently came out called Ain't My America, The Long, Noble History of Anti-War Conservatism and Middle American Anti-Imperialism. Again, finding out the real meaning of these words and reclaiming them for ourselves and not letting Limbaugh and the others define these terms for us or define people or define organizations for us. I mean, imagine if we really gave a platform to feminists and just present the work they do, the problems they face. And it would so shame, you know, people like Hannity, who the only instance of rape that they'll talk about is one where it may have been a false accusation. For instance, the Duke case. They've milked that thing for like 2 years. It's a narrative they're putting out quite consciously while quite consciously avoiding the narrative of the real rapes, the thousands and thousands of rapes that take place in this country every year. And the people working on the issue are feminists, not feminazis, you frickin' Nazis. Who are the Nazis?
Generally the people who, yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
So, Ms. Magazine. Guys, we need to subscribe to Ms. Magazine.
Well, and that's like that that other that Moore book that we started the conversation on. It would do well for men to pay attention, and you know, maybe that's part of the problem, the compartmentalization. Oh, these are women's issues.
Right, right.
Excuse me, and that, you know, that runs against the grain that there are you know, black issues or brown issues or women's issues or hillbillies issues. You know, I just want to jump up and down or labor, you know, or labor issues.
Right. You're so right.
You know, BS, 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 BS. I just want to scream.
Yeah.
These are human issues. You know, it's like what I've heard Malloy say time and time again, Preston, that he rejects the idea of gay issues, that they are human rights issues.
Yeah, universal Declaration of Human Rights.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. Paying attention to this stuff, even though it appears to have been compartmentalized for someone else, is very, very important. And in point of fact, you'll probably appreciate this. And I'm not telling tales out of school or anything. I will be tied up most of Monday and Tuesday. Not for sure that there won't be a show, but quite likely there won't be a show. But I'll be tied up Monday and Tuesday because the folks at Cold River Mountain Watch are doing something absolutely brilliant and something that I think is going to be transformative. They are holding for the entire organization a racism workshop. And it's I look forward to it being an absolutely brilliant, transformative, challenging event, because I think it's gonna run. It's not just gonna be race. It's gonna be all the isms. And I have a feeling, you know, I sit here and I make a conscious effort to be sensitive to these issues and to treat them with dignity and respect. And yet, you know what? I know that I know for a fact that there are places where I fail. I suspect that those will all be confronted, and I'm going to have to deal with them. I'll have to deal with them in terms of whether we're talking about gender or this new word that I've just learned, heterosexism, which I think is a brilliant word. That I'm going to have to confront these things. And, you know, one of the things, you know, we don't really think too much about it, at least here where I am, because, frankly, the percentage of the population of West Virginia that is comprised of persons of color is not very high. And so we don't have it in our faces, we're not confronted, you know, racism and stuff like that doesn't usually rise up, but that's because there's so many white folks. But then lo and behold, you know, the primary comes along in May, and there's all the footage of West Virginia Democratic primary voters saying, I can't vote for him, because, and we've got to learn to recognize it and to confront it. This idea of confrontation is all over me. You can't let it slide by.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think it's going to be good for the whole organization. You know, there's this news story out there, Preston, about one of the California GOP organizations that has put out Obama bucks. Have you seen this?
No.
Because this is fit to make a person scream. These things are called Obama bucks. And they, it's a phony $10 bill with an image of Barack Obama on it. And I kid you not, around it, around his picture, a field of food stamps.
Oh, jeez.
Fried chicken. Watermelon.
God, where was this?
It's from a Republican outfit in California.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Let's see. Then there's the sign that links him to. Let's see if I can get her close enough to read it. Barack Hussein Obama. This is the greatest country on the face of the earth. Something, something, and we change it. Who else called for change in this fashion? Barack Obama, Karl Marx, Joseph Stalin, Adolf Hitler, Benito Mussolini, Fidel Castro. And you want Obama for president? Are you nuts?
Right, right.
And we have got to get into a place where we learn to confront it and to be. This is one place where tolerance is not called for.
Yep. And if you know, not everyone wants to call into talk radio or whatever, but there's always some avenue for resistance.
Oh yeah. Consider this, Preston. New robocalls going out. The third in a series. Robocalls going out, just sliming Barack Obama. Here's the script. Hello, I'm calling for John McCain and the RNC because you need to know that Barack Obama has worked closely with domestic terrorist Bill Ayers, whose organization bombed the U.S. Capitol, the Pentagon, a judge's home, and killed Americans. And Democrats will enact an extreme leftist agenda if they take control of Washington. Barack Obama and his Democratic allies lack the judgment to lead our country. This call was paid for by the McCain Pail in 2008 and the Republican National Committee at 202-863-8500. They're running in Wisconsin and New Mexico.
I actually got a live call, not a robocall, but a live call about a month ago from a woman in Oregon. I wasn't at home, so she left a voicemail. Lady in Oregon who was going to be able to convince me that Barack Obama's name or Barack himself contains the number 666.
Oh, God.
Call her back if I wanted to learn how. And so, I mean, that they were able to get my number, that they've got people, you know, calling with this stuff. And, yeah, they're active for sure. And, again, we can certainly find our ways to be active. But back to Bill Ayers again. There's a film, a documentary called The Weather Underground, which is excellent. And Bill Ayers is featured in that. They actually played a clip of it on Hannity's show the other day. He didn't say the name of the film because I don't think he wants people to see the film and get a little more context, for, Ayers' actions. Again, whether you agree with them or not. But speaking of terrorist groups, a small article I clipped out of the Rocky Mountain News, you know, the corporate media,
sure.
McCain linked to Iran-Contra group. You know, Republican Senator John McCain served on the advisory board of the U.S. chapter of an international group linked to ultra-right-wing death squads in Central America in the 1980s. The U.S. Council for World Freedom, Orwell wouldn't like the name, also aided rebels trying to overthrow the leftist government of Nicaragua that landed the group in the middle of the Iran-Contra affair. The council created by retired Army Major General John Sigloob was the U.S. chapter of the World Anti-Communist League, an organization linked to the former Nazi collaborators and death squads in Central America. Who are the Nazis?
Who indeed? Who indeed?
Well, not Obama, not his movement, that's for sure. We've got a resistance going. So
I think you're and we just have to keep it going. And it's so important, you know, that he's getting close in West Virginia. And one of the things, you know, I mentioned the West Virginia issue from the primary earlier. Those were largely disgusted, angry Hillary voters. But you know what?
Yeah.
I will not be surprised if Barack Obama carries this state.
because, with Colorado.
Yeah. Interesting story out of the Wall Street Journal today. In fact, I had to take issue with this, and I wrote the author of the story. The Wall Street Journal had a story by a woman by the name of Sarah Murray. Headline, Obama campaign to blanket West Virginia with ad spots. Okay, no argument with the slug. But the opening sentence is, Senator Barack Obama's presidential campaign is launching a television advertising blitz in the traditionally Republican state of West Virginia. And at that point, knee into the furniture. And so I sent the woman off a note. And I asked her just, on what planet she lived, and pointed out to her that we voted, West Virginia sent its electoral college votes to George McGovern, to Michael Dukakis, to Jimmy Carter, both times, to Walter Mondale, to Bill Clinton both times, And that the votes for George Bush were driven by hate and fueled by bigotry. And, this stuff just gets put out in the traditional. There's nothing traditional. You know, we've got a Democratic governor, at least in name. We've got a Democratic legislature, at least in name. Two out of three members of our congressional delegation are Democrats. Both United States senators are Democrats. Theoretically, the Supreme Court that we have had a Democratic majority on it, and it's a matter of the meaning of words, Preston. But just to be, and so she wrote me back and attempted to explain to me why it was she wrote what she did. But it was specious at best, because she claimed that it was a matter of, my spin or my, here it is. Thanks for reading and taking time to write. I can see why this could be debatable. I felt comfortable writing it for a couple of reasons. First, you're right, the state's been known to be especially Democratic further down the ticket. Well, I specifically pointed out to her why it was not down the ticket. We're talking about the way West Virginia responds to Democratic presidential candidates. And she says, West Virginia is quite a Democratic state, but Bush sailed through the state in 2000 and by an even wider margin in 2004. Okay, I got that. I understand that. But that does not make us tradition. In other words, she's saying that 8 years a tradition makes. That right. Two presidential elections out of literally three generations constitutes a tradition. And it's a level of dishonesty. And she wrote back, because I was a little snarky. It was right before the show, and sometimes I'm not real nice. I said, what then is your standard of measurement for traditionally Republican? Is it Rupert Murdoch told me it was?
Right. They're trying to create their own legacy and tradition. And
they're trying to create their own reality. I said, the Wall Street Journal's journalistic standards are sliding faster than the dummied up three-card Monte stock market it purports to cover.
Yep.
They
love that image of allegedly red America. The states that went Republican in the last election. And there's a lot by a particular definition. I mean, you had Colorado and Nebraska, Iowa, much of the South. And so they make it either red or blue. Blue is off to the edges, New York, California. So it gives this impression that the heartland and the heart of the country is red. Well, yes and no. They did win that election, but I think only half or so of the eligible voters were registered to vote. Of them, just barely half voted red. So essentially you've got a quarter of the population red. And those that don't register to vote tend to be people who are much more, beyond liberal, actually, very actually more democratic socialist. They believe in the government's role to do crazy things like promote the general welfare.
Yeah, nutty stuff.
As the Constitution suggests. Again, they've turned words of the Constitution into dirty words in their world. Welfare? Well, no. Can't have that. It says in the Constitution, but we hate the country, we hate the Constitution and representative government, so that's terrible. But anyway, a movie I just got from this progressive film club called Ironweed. The title feature is Red State Road Trip. And somebody asked,
yes.
Have you seen that? Do you know about that?
I know about it, but I have not seen it.
Okay, I think a person or two kind of distraught after the Kerry loss in 2004 went out and into the Red States, so-called, to see what he could find. And, you know, certainly you could take a film like that either way and create one that's very, you know, dismaying, you know. But his film and what he found, for the most part, was, you know, much more progressive sentiment.
And again, that jibes with what Joe Connison found several years ago in his book Big Lies. He analyzed the polling data, and without fail, the responses of Americans to progressive ideas, if you aggregate them, is that you know we about 70% of America wants to see the things that progressives and liberals want to see.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But it's all in how you put it. It's like the thing that got under my skin so badly Wednesday evening, It was Tuesday evening. The debate was Wednesday, I guess. When I went into the local pharmacy and received a lecture on socialized medicine from my fundamentalist pharmacist.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Well, that's socialism. We don't want socialism, do we?" I looked at him and I said, "Be fine by me." Well, we don't need, I said, we drive on socialized roads. We have socialized banks. But we don't need no socialized medicine. I said, you know, 47 million uninsured Americans might disagree with you. And he tried that. And, you know, you can spot these people from a mile away, Preston. Because if you train your ear to listen to the talking points, it's like the Bible says, by their fruits you shall know them. And so here's this guy who says, nobody ever gets turned away from an emergency room. We have health care for people who need it. I said, now stop that. That may work with some people. But it doesn't work with me because I know that federal law mandates, and I said federal law mandates that a person who doesn't have insurance and comes to an emergency room be stabilized. It does not mandate that they be treated.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we sure don't need that socialized medicine.
Yeah, and also if you're waiting to the point where you're going to an emergency room, that's an issue oftentimes itself, you know, where people aren't going for checkups and getting preventative care.
Well, exactly. And that's one of the things I had a conversation with someone about last night. You can save a ton of money if you just, I know who it was I had the conversation with. It was, the brilliant young chef who was, cooking in one of the rooms. He said, you know, we talk about health care. His name is Barton Seaver. He said we can save a lot of money on health care just by teaching people how to eat right. And that does. And again, it goes back to our thesis, Preston, about not viewing being responsible about energy as a sacrifice. Dear Lord in heaven, eating right does not mean eating poorly.
Yep.
The stuff that gets put on little silver plates in New York City with a $30 price tag attached to it, a whole bunch of that rose up to haute cuisine status because it was po' folks food. All you got to do is sit down and watch somebody like Tony Bourdain or the Alton Brown, these people who talk about the origins of food, and you find that out. You know, that's why I was so proud that we serve beans and cornbread in our hall. Because those are staples of, those are dietary staples of a whole lot of the world. And it's not like eating cardboard. I mean, you know, it's delicious. And, you know, I had little sides of cheddar cheese and all kinds of stuff that I'm not supposed to eat. But the beans themselves were fabulous.
And we could save a ton of money, but again, that's back to the fiduciary responsibility.
Right. Saving money is sacrificing.
Right.
Damn, what happened? A generation, two, three generations ago, that was seen as not only prudent and wise, but pleasurable, because then you had money to do stuff with otherwise.
Yeah, it's great for us, but, you know, got to have those revenue growths. And, treating your children better, you know, is not a sacrifice. Healthier food for them. And it involves the whole system, too. I mean, it's educating people. It's also having, you know, not letting McDonald's bulldoze, you know, other restaurants, you know, indigenous,
sure,
smaller businesses. And they're using all these financial levers, not their popularity necessarily at all, but financial levers, their real estate deals, their massive marketing campaigns to destroy other food traditions. And, to, again, challenging corporate tyrannies. Remember when José Bové, the French farmer and organic advocate and traditional food,
yes,
food security advocate, actually took a bulldozer to a McDonald's?
Yeah.
He's been about 6 months, I think, or a year or so in jail for that. But, and again, a food movement going on again.
And it was really cool to see that this young, up-and-coming young chef was part of that. Because it, you know, right there on the business card. And I mean, this guy is not serving icky food. But there on the business card, it says sustainability begins with people. And I don't think he's a greenwasher. I think he's real based on what I talked to him about. And we'll find out, you know, if I told him, if you can find time away from the kitchen, you know, grab a phone and we'll talk for 30 minutes. He said, I'd love to. So there you go. Preston, this has been a delightful conversation. We haven't had a good one like this in a long time. But we're running up on the hour, so I will run along. But thank you very much for all the ideas and all the dialogue and all the discussion.
My pleasure, definitely. Good night to you and Agnes and people in the audience. Peace, everybody.
All right, and you have a great weekend.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That's Preston calling from Denver. A million good ideas in that conversation. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Good evening.
Well, hey, Ed.
Just listening to the conversation, it was good. But I was just mainly listening in. But, you know, on this name calling, you all just barely touched on that. You know, when I was in the union movement, the name, when they can't think of nothing else to do, they think of some kind of name to call you. And you know, you do you know that if I knew what I know now, I would have probably been totally ignoring, you know, what their words were, because they call you a little bit, you know, I have a union leader tell me, you know, you're a little bit pink, aren't you, Ed? And I said, well, if that gets my family fed, and I said, because capitalism don't guarantee you a damn thing. And that don't mean I'm against capitalism. That means that a man's got to find the level that he can make a living at for his family.
Yeah.
And the name calling don't help it. You know, it don't pay and it don't take nothing away. So I appreciate the remarks on that, and you already know how I feel about a national health bill, and we almost got that through one time, and of course you was just a boy then, but Carter would have signed that bill if we'd have, just like a few votes, getting that national health bill before him. But, if I'm remembering right, I think that's the top of the list with me. You know, the war, the economic situation is bad, but I still believe it'll work its way out if it has to bottom out. But the other things, the insurance and the things that keep some parent's baby alive is so critical. You know, I mean, and people don't care until...
You never see one of these pro-lifers carrying a placard that says health care for all.
Yeah, never.
Because that'd be Bolshevism.
Yeah.
That'd be a little bit pink.
Yeah. Well, after names to call you, but that don't bother me. But I enjoyed, I just want to tell you, I enjoyed the program. and enjoyed that whoever he was that made the comments on all of that. I enjoyed that about as much as any of them I've heard lately. So,
well, Preston always brings a lot to the table.
Yeah, I don't believe I heard him before.
We usually wind up talking on Friday nights somehow or another, and it's a great way to end the weekend or end the week.
Yeah, I didn't get in till late, so I didn't get to, I didn't call in till a little bit late, but I enjoyed all I heard. And just keep up the good work and miss you when you're not there.
Well, I miss not being here. But there's, you know, there is some stuff going on that you just get pulled six or seven different ways from Sunday. And some of this stuff is really, really important. I really had hoped to broadcast last night, but it was just not physically feasible because the crowd was so large and the room was so filled with tables with important information on it for environmental journalists to avail themselves of. You know, maybe next time we'll know a little bit better and we'll get there a day or so in advance and we'll be able to scope stuff out and figure out a way.
Yeah, where does this stuff take place at?
Well, this Society for Environmental Journalists meeting was in Roanoke, Virginia.
Sorry?
Roanoke.
Roanoke?
Yeah.
Okay.
Somebody's
ringing in and I don't want to hang up the...
Well, I understand. We're about done with the program, so I'm glad you could listen in, and we'll talk again soon.
Okay.
All right, you take care, Ed.
All right, and you too.
All right, bye now.
Bye.
So that's the program for this evening. And thank you for your participation, for your emails. Just to share a note with you, this was a beautiful thing that I got earlier. It came from a listener in the chat room who goes by the nickname of Thunderstone. In relation to an earlier question, how did we get where we are? The following words fill my thoughts and my heart. The man who sat on the ground in his teepee meditating on life and its meaning, accepting the kinship of all creatures and acknowledging the unity with the universe of things, was infusing into his being the true essence of civilization. And when native man left off this form of development, his humanization was retarded in growth. Chief Luther Standing Bear from Touch the Earth. Then from Crowfoot, also in Touch the Earth, what is life? It is the flash of a firefly in the night. It is the breath of a buffalo in the wintertime. It is the little shadow which runs across the grass and loses itself in the sunset. What is the ultimate value of a being's life, of all life? Thunderstone asks. That is the question truly begging to be answered. Some brief thoughts running through my mind, spurred by the conversation and wishing to be shared. Thoughts and love. My thoughts and love to Agnes and my chat buddies. Thanks, Thunderstone. Thank you very, very much. Thank you to all of you. Your emails, your presence in the chat room, downloading the archives and podcasts, listening live, however it is that you participate in what we think is a pretty bold experiment in conversation, debate, dialogue, and discussion. Thank you for your participation. Thank you for keeping the horn on the air through your contributions either by mail to Head On 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia 25801, or by clicking the PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com. Thank you very kindly. It is a monthly struggle, but it is a struggle that is done in joy. Thank you. Thanks to Peter Godbold and John Fox, our IT professional and our chief engineer. Thanks for the hardest working, most overworked man in liberal talk, Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. It was a joy to see so many of you in Roanoke yesterday and last night. Thank you, all of you. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Let me first of all tender to you my profound apologies for not being on the air Thursday evening. I was at a reception for the Society of Environmental Journalists in Roanoke, Virginia. I had hoped to broadcast from there, but the rooms were wall-to-wall with information and tables bearing the same. And frankly, there was no room for little old me. And it's something we didn't know going over whether there would be or not. It didn't work out that way. Met a lot of wonderful people. And did a little bit of talking to folks about the hell of mountaintop removal and how it affects the rest of the nation and, in fact, the planet. So it was time well spent. Learned a lot of stuff, too. Saw some great exhibits. And, yes, ate some wonderful food. Oh, a lot of good food. So that's where I was. But this evening, well, this evening is an entirely different situation, or actually it's not different, it's entirely normal. I'm seated here in the chair behind the non-golden Head On Radio Network microphone, and it's Friday, the close of the week, and the front end, the close of a week that leads to a very, very busy week coming. Tomorrow is, of course, hereabouts, a little something we call Bridge Day. When it's the only time of the year when people are actually allowed out on the walking around on the New River Gorge Bridge, and it's also the only time of the year when it is legal to base jump from the bridge. Folks leap off of a platform into the New River Gorge from the bridge, and it's just a stunning sight. It is really this area's best foot put forward.
And we will have family members working various different booths. One of my daughters will be working a booth related to mountaintop removal and to the attack, the assault on the very mountain that graces the back of the West Virginia.